This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome you in to Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Stormy Bonantoni with you alongside Jonathan Von Tobel to my left today. This is, by the way, the last day that we will be in studio at Circa Resort and Casino this week because we are hitting the road to Omaha later on today.
Yes, very much looking forward to that. Can't wait to be out there later this evening to take in a wonderful town and to see what it's all about. I already got my walking shoes. I'm already going to be exploring later this evening. I cannot wait to go see where I'm going to watch the game later tonight because we have the NBA Finals.
You have your walking shoes. You're already packed and ready to go. You're going straight after this. I haven't packed yet.
You haven't packed?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I packed and I'm ready to go because logistically.
I should have done it last night. I just didn't think it through.
Just makes sense. I mean, I might as well just go there and sit around and do work. I do have work to do, so might as well just get there, not worry about it, and see who comes in late and who decides to, I don't know, loaf.
Loaf? Yeah. Why are we assuming I'm loafing?
You haven't packed yet.
But that just means I'm, you know, somebody who's very, I'm very easygoing. I'm relaxed. I wouldn't call that loafing.
Okay. We'll see.
On that note, we got a, seasoned traveler, as Brian Ortega just said in my ear. I've got it down to a science. I've got my TSA pre-check. I've got clear. Whatever line is shorter, we're cruising on through. Once we get there, I'm getting dropped off by my brother today. We're ready. We're locked and loaded,
ladies and
gentlemen.
We're also only there for like three nights, 2 days.
Yeah.
So you don't really have to pack that much.
Just got to find some VSiN t-shirts to bring. So
I did not bring any.
You didn't?
No.
That was the one requirement in the email.
It was not required. It was just to bring whatever gear you have. As you astutely pointed out, though, we do have to pay for all of our VSiN gear. And one of the VSiN things that I own is a very ratty The Edge t-shirt. So I don't
that
think
that would be great. Vintage.
Yeah, very vintage. I don't think they would allow me to wear it.
Okay, great, jam-packed 2 hours ahead. Lots to get to. Let's kick it off like we always do. It's time for the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
Top three items we're hitting on in the program today. It's a Wednesday, so you know what that means. Why Not Wednesday coming up. I have one that involves a long shot in the VSiN Jello Shots odds contest for the College World Series, which I didn't know was a thing until this morning. Shout out VSiN by the books. And then I've got a couple Stanley Cup thoughts, which will be good as well. Anything that you really like in Why Not Wednesday today?
I have something that I don't think you'll be happy about.
Pretty par for the course for you. Speaking of which, lots of golf on deck today as well. The U.S. Open has action getting underway tomorrow, third major of the season. Can anyone stop Scottie Scheffler? A big question we're trying to figure out. He's in Tiger territory as a plus 275 favorite, and I mean that literally. He's the shortest shot for U.S. Open since Tiger in 2009. We have Reed Fowler coming up in hour two of PGA Tour Live and ESPN Radio. Give us his thoughts and best bets, and in 30 minutes, Kelly Bidlin, who you just heard on a numbers game. Co-host of the Long Shots podcast. He'll be in studio with us as well for his thoughts there in the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see if they echo the sentiments of maybe fading away some of these big bombers who don't have much accuracy. And if there is really maybe somebody we could find a little bit deeper in the weeds to back to at least win this, or maybe some top fives, top 20s, because I would generally agree looking at this course a little bit more. I want my straight shooters. I don't want so much power off the tee.
This course screams chaos, and I have some bets too that we'll get to at the very end of the show. And last but certainly not least, as we hit our top three items, in addition to the Stanley Cup final talk, NBA Finals, we got game action coming up tonight. Game three, Thunder lose outright in game one as a 10.5-point favorite before bouncing back with a 16-point win the other night. Total split JVT 1-1 as we head to Indiana for game three. The Thunder laying 5 for the game, total 227.5. They're minus 525 in the adjusted series price right now.
Yeah, looking forward to it. As I told Gil, this is still happening because it has been, it feels like so long since our last NBA Finals game. And even that game was kind of a bore because the Thunder controlled it from tip to tail. So very much looking forward to later tonight to see if that's going to continue, to see whether or not the Thunder can cover their first road game of this postseason. I think will be pretty interesting too. But finally back in action after what seems like an eternity between games.
Yeah, you've detailed this well. OKC this postseason 0-7 ATS on the road in the playoffs, missing the closing number two by an average of 8 points per game. In game three specifically, not only have they not covered, they've lost game three outright in each of the last two series, fell 113-104 to Denver in overtime, and then after going up 2-0 against Minnesota at home, got blasted 143-101 in game three on the road. That said, something that I don't think that we've mentioned much is that while OKC has struggled in game threes, Indiana kind of said, hold my beer from game three. 0-3 straight up, 0-3 ATS. They're missing that closing number by an average of 12 points per game.
Now, I believe, man, this whole postseason has been a blur, but they've also been up in each of the series in which they've lost game three. I believe they started 2-0 in each of the series. So that's the natural, the human nature element of it, right? Which is to kind of let up when you have a commanding 2-0 series lead, correct? Especially when you were the lower seeded team in every single round, because that was the case for Indiana, right? Went to Milwaukee, went up 2-0, if I remember correctly. Was that series first? They might have been the higher seed actually against Milwaukee. I apologize. It was many, many weeks ago. But regardless, went up 2-0 in each of those series.
It's all a blur and rolls together. You're not alone in that.
But the whole point is they go up, they let down, and I think that is some human nature in game three. So maybe that makes a little sense that they're losing those. It seems like a small sample size trend. But for Oklahoma City, they just haven't been good on the road. And each of the game threes have been on the road because they are the one seed and they are the top seeded team in the NBA. So I am very curious. And I think you really start with what do your role players do for you? Jalen Williams in 7 road games shooting just 43% from the floor. That is going to be something where you're looking at that and saying, can you start to wake up here a little bit? And really has come around. And the good performance for Jalen Williams was the last road game. So maybe this is going to be something that you can really turn things around. But if you take away that game at Minnesota where he scored 34 points on 13-23 shooting, the 6 games prior away from home for Williams, 40% shooting from the floor, 28% from beyond the arc, that has to be better. The role players have to be better away from home for OKC.
No doubt about it. If you go to the website right now, up at VSiN.com, your good buddy Zach Cohen, he's got a breakdown of his best bets for the game tonight. Dan Karpuk also has prop angles that he's taken a look at. And Zach has been on the Pacers for a while. He cashed that big ticket on them to just, what was it, make the Eastern Conference Final or win the Eastern Conference Final. Now they're here, and he's been backing them pretty consistently as well. He likes them on the spread mostly this evening, but took a money line shot with them as well. When you go through his rationale in the article, I think a lot of it did make sense. If you had to make a bet on this game today, what would it be? Would you be more interested in laying it or taking it?
To me, it'd be laying it or nothing. I believe in OKC defensively. That has been the constant theme, despite the struggles of specific players, despite the struggles of this offense, despite not being able to shoot consistently. The constant theme for Oklahoma City, the constant thread has been this defense. There has not been a blip on the radar with this defense at all throughout this entire postseason run. You're looking at a defense, Stormy, that in the regular season, off of live rebounds in transition, was one of the best defenses in the regular season. They've continued that here in the postseason. They are not – this was a great stat, I think it was from Game 2, that Tyrese Haliburton in Game 2, according to ESPN, generated one transition play. We're not talking about points. We're talking about one transition play. In Game 2, they are doing a brilliant job of shutting this team down. They are capable of doing it. They're one of the few teams that is capable of going out there and running defensively and making sure that Indiana does not get what they want in terms of tempo and pace off of rebounds. And I don't think that changes just because you're going somewhere else. The shooting might change. You might shoot worse. Indiana maybe just goes nuts and you end up losing out on this. But I don't think that through the first 2 games, the issues that Indiana's had on offense – just go away because they're playing in a different building. And I think the Thunder can continue to make that happen.
The total 227.5, 228. I know I said that the totals have been split so far. You referenced yesterday you think this is more of an under series. I don't think that Indiana has necessarily gotten enough credit for how good they are defensively at times as well. Like OKC, naturally better in that area and one of the best in the entire NBA this year. But with that total, do you kind of lean under for this one as well?
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who thinks, again, that the Thunder are going to be able to do what they're doing defensively, I would lean under again. If you like OKC, you think you're thinking that this thing is going to go over, tight contested game, offense performs relatively well. But I just, again, you know, offensive rating through 2 games, 109 or thereabouts for the Indiana Pacers. Maybe the role players just come out and they shoot lights out and the threes go down. It's certainly a possibility. Nothing is impossible, obviously. And we've seen this Pacers team pull off the improbable. So there is always a universe in which they just go back out home and just hit contested shots and they end up scoring at will. But I think that if I'm right, even with a little bit more tempo, if you get out and run a little bit more often, doesn't mean that the points are generally going to come. And if the Thunder are good on defense, while their own offense continues to struggle in these foreign environments, I think it leans itself to going under.
Series-wise, if you remember pre-finals, OKC laying 2.5 games was a -140 price. Just kind of go through the updated numbers, laying 1.5 games now. So to win 6 or fewer games is -160. I'm still of the belief that they win in 5 or 6 games. So
don't back down.
Is that a worthwhile angle to buy in on still at what is a discounted price, having lost that first game?
About 105, 2-1.
I don't know if I want to go there necessarily.
Come on.
But I think they win in 5 or 6.
Okay. I'll just say save it for why not Wednesday.
Okay. Okay. I haven't seen yours yet. Yeah. So that's good. There was one prop that I liked tonight, and I know that we'll rehash everything at the end of the show in best bets, but I did throw a little on Tyrese Halliburton over 17.5 points today. I'm not a big Tyrese Halliburton fan in generally, generally speaking, especially.
Were you one of the ones that voted him most overrated?
No, I was not. I think he's a very good clutch player, and he's demonstrated that repeatedly throughout the course of the postseason. But from a point standpoint, especially against OKC defensively, how good they've been, I've been very anti him, especially on the road. But yeah, now that you're coming home, his home road numbers are significantly different. So I feel like he should at least get over 17.5. He had 17 last game.
Yeah, I find myself gravitating more toward Pascal Siakam than I do with Tyrese Halliburton in this series and in this game, only because, again, like, I think of all the team, the way this series sets up with the way they've matched up with each other, it sets up for a big Siakam series. I bet him over 19.5 points for the series per game. So hoping that today Siakam can have a pretty big game in terms of scoring and rebounding, because added him as well to lead the series in rebounds.
By the way, with the players all voting Tyrese Halliburton the most overrated, you know his dad's going to be back there on the court today.
John Halliburton.
You're not going to get those chance at home, right? You're not going to get the overrated chance at home. So that's always a positive
no,
for Tyrese.
No, you're not. I think they're going to be fine there. But I can't wait. I hope it's going to be competitive. Hopefully it's not like the last game in either direction where it's just kind of a lame blowout, because that would mean then the last Stanley Cup game was kind of lame. Then this one, we need some action.
Yeah. We will have more NBA Finals talk coming up a little bit later on this hour when Kelly Bidlin joins us in studio. But when we return, did Florida's dominant win in Game 3 of the Cup Final demoralize Edmonton? Or will the Oilers be able to bounce back? Plus, we've got some day baseball coming up this hour. JVT's thoughts on Miami-Pittsburgh next. Don't miss it.
Here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. JBT, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Got a full slate of MLB coming up, including a handful of day games. One I have action in a little bit later on this morning, coming up in hour two, Cubs-Phillies. But Marlins-Pirates set to have first pitch in about 20 minutes or so. Anything in this game that stood out to you, JBT?
It is a baseball game that we played on June 11th.
That is true.
Yes.
Facts at PNC Park.
That's
no
right.
Less.
No, not particularly. The market doesn't really seem to have much interest in either, because we haven't really seen much movement here. Some spots open at $1.50. We're still sitting at $1.50. It will open 8.5. We're still sitting at 8.5. It's within 5 cents of the opening price in most spots. So it doesn't really seem like there's much action. Probably not much of an edge either. Cal Quantrill is going to get the start here today. Nothing to write home about for Cal here. Last start, we had talked about him at length. He's actually, in his last four outings, been pretty solid. Given up less than two earned runs in each of the last four against the Rays, Angels, Giants, and Rockies. Nothing really to write home about there. So maybe if he comes out and gets a leg up on a pretty poor Pirates lineup, that could be something that ends up happening here. Bailey Falter, pretty in line with what we've seen, over 69 and two-thirds. So I think it's relatively priced. I mean, look, the Marlins are not a good team. We just watched them get swept, as we all remember.
Yeah.
And Quantrill is a prone to blow up against some lineups. Maybe the Pirates can do it to him. I don't think there's really any giant edge here.
Yeah, Marlins fell in game one of the series, bounced back yesterday, survived two solo eighth inning homers to win that one. But low scoring, close game, 3-2 in that one. Marlins have dropped seven of their last nine games, including, as you referenced, the sweep the other day to the worst team in baseball, which is fun. I do have a bet involving the Rockies later on today.
Yeah.
Potentially. Also, yesterday, by the way, the Yankees,
it's one of those where the second I had made the bet and I was thinking about it more, I'm like, yeah, I'm wrong. Like, this is, and I even said it to Adam, that it was going to be loud wrong.
The more Adam talked about it, and then the more I started thinking about what you were saying about Yankees lineup against left-handed pitching, and then that kid who had been so good.
Yeah, Cameron had been great. And I don't know if you watched it, but so I was like, I made an appointment viewing because I was excited for it too. So turn the game on. Cameron facing Judge there in the top of the first. And he's struggling to find the strike zone. Like, at one point, I think he throws like six straight balls. And I'm like, and I just say to myself, Judge is probably going to go yard here. Mm. And then on the next pitch, it goes out of there. It was 469 feet or whatever. absolutely crushed. And of course, I had first three under 1.5, so that got done. And I was still pulling for you. Hopefully that was going to be the case. Ultimately, wasn't. 6 earned, 5 2/3. 6 strikeouts for Cameron, but the young lefty got pummeled, and that's what we kind of talked about. So good on Adam, who I think was at first 5 over 2.5, ended up getting there, and they absolutely crushed the kid.
Yeah, getting there easily. So our thought process with the early game unders weren't there. And you even sent along the text message from Jeff Passan of ESPN, who said that Aaron Judge homer almost went over the Royals Hall of Fame at Kauffman Stadium, which he said he's seen hundreds of games at and never seen that. So,
I mean, it was wild. He absolutely raked them, and we'll see what's going to happen for Cameron moving forward. There was some signs that he was going to regress to the mean, but like not anything crazy. But when you don't really have a live fastball and you're kind of working on deception, as Adam had put, we'll see how long that can last for you if you're going to be a guy like Cameron. But still, there is some hope for him and the Kansas City Royals as one of their top pitching prospects.
Yeah, we'll have plenty more MLB talk a little bit later on the show. Reminder, everybody, EdgeBoost, the first ever bank account built for bettors, ensuring all gambling transactions are approved. No usage fees, no minimums. You get cash back rewards plus 100% approval for any and all betting deposits if you sign up today at edgeboost.bet. That's edgeboost.bet. And use our promo code MONEY. Deposit $25. EdgeBoost will match that deposit for you. Head over today to edgeboost.bet. Also today, we're going to get into a little bit of the NHL Stanley Cup final talk. Panthers now have a 2-1 series lead over the Oilers. Edmonton got crushed on Monday in game 3, a 6-1 final. Panthers now in the series, JVT, are minus 260 to repeat as cup champs. They're also a minus 148 favorite to hold on to home ice tomorrow. Once again, Edmonton plus 215 dogs in the series, plus 124 on the road tomorrow as they try to bounce back. And I know we addressed this a little bit yesterday, but I am genuinely very, very curious to see how Edmonton comes out in this game. Was that loss something that does impact you and does demoralize you and you continue to play into Florida's game? Or is it, because it was a blowout, just something you can more easily flush? And maybe there is something to the fighting at the end of the game that made you feel engaged in the series.
I mean, you can probably flush it. It's one of those burn the tape things, right? Sure. Where you just don't even go back and watch it. I think the problem is, who'd we hear from yesterday about they're getting away with more than we are?
Evander Kane.
You're right. So, like, it feels like that team is sticking with something. Something is bothering them with the way that these games are either being called or whatever it is. And if they start to feel that way again when this game comes back around, you do wonder if they're going to be able to get out of that mentally, or if they start sniping at the officials or start doing what they were doing again in that contest. That, to me, is always kind of the worry. When outside of the rear end whooping, there is also a mental aspect of not being able to get over the powers that be, the way the game is called. They're getting away with it. That's not fair. That's, I think, always a little bit of a problem for me when you're talking about the big picture of the series, especially when you're having to play on foreign ice again. Like, whether or not we think home ice is worth whatever it is, that's a tough environment to be in when you're playing away from home. It's very charged. It's a final environment. And to have those factors come in, you're not getting the calls you want, the home is crowds against you, all those sort of things, whatever you're hearing, I would be worried if you were an Edmonton backer that they're able to kind of get out of this. Because in reading on it, you would know this better than I, having watched like regular season hockey, there are many who are saying that echoes some of what they believed could be a problem for this Oilers team heading into the postseason, that they had been a little thin-skinned, that they had been talking about these sort of things, that they had been one to maybe lose some of the mental focus through periods of the regular season, and that's not really one of their greatest attributes.
I think that's fair. And then it doesn't help if that is something that's one of your attributes facing a Florida Panthers team that is among the best in the league at agitation and at bringing that out of opposing teams. That said, if you do think Edmonton can come back in the series, and I will say, even with getting blown out in game 3, some of the underlying metrics do still favor the Edmonton Oilers. They have a slight edge in expected goals and high danger scoring chances created. They still do have the best player in the world on their side in Connor McDavid, who he and Leon Draisaitl were both held off the score sheet last game. But looking at the Conn Smythe numbers, if you think Edmonton can come back, before games 1 and 2, it was McDavid's MVP to lose. Now Sam Bennett is the favorite in that market. But when you compare prices, McDavid for Conn Smythe is plus 240 compared to Edmonton to win the series plus 215. I wonder if that could potentially be an angle, because you expect if they come back, Connor McDavid's going to have to put the team on his back to do that.
Yeah, well, so I will ask you, I mean, because it does, Leon Draisaitl is
12
very
to
much,
one.
He, sure. What I was going to say is he's very much respected, right? So when you're looking at this from the standpoint of the comeback, and Leon Draisaitl going to have to be a part of this, I, like you could tell me, but I'm going to assume that Connor McDavid just can't, to use the old reference, put the team on de facto, right, and, like, carry them to victory. Drysdale's got to be a part of that. Would you consider him as well?
I would. I would. I just wonder if the Edmonton – and this is right, wrong, or indifferent, however you want to say it. I just wonder if the Edmonton Oilers win the Stanley Cup if they don't give it to Connor McDavid, just from a –
Right, like a Shea Gilgeous-Alexander thing. Like, there's no universes in which the Thunder win that series and he does not win Finals MVP.
That and, yeah. I mean, like, they lost the Stanley Cup Final last year and McDavid still won it. So,
by the way, he's out of that realm this year, correct?
Yes.
Like, he's not playing at that same level?
No,
where...
he's not. He was setting records last year for postseason points and all of that different stuff. But I just, putting all of these underlying factors together and thinking the Edmonton Oilers win their first cup since 1990 and it's not Connor McDavid that's the guy that gets the cup first and is holding the Conn Smythe. I would find it somewhat hard to believe.
And that's it for Oilers, correct?
Yeah, those are the only two. Okay. Those are the only two. That's it. I do like a prop on an Oilers player for game four. Evan Bouchard shots on goal have been unreal so far in this series. My props have been going well, so let's see if we can keep it rolling. He's not typically a big shot volume type of guy. More than seven shots on goal all three games so far. Game one, he had seven. Game two, he had eight. Game three, he had nine. And his prop is set at 2.5. It's minus 215. But if you look at some of these alts, the over 3.5 is plus 110, 5.5, plus 220, 6.5, plus 320. The list goes on. And I think some of those alts could definitely be in play for Evan Bouchard, who's been extremely involved in this offensively.
Okay. All right. I'm at the point where I'll blindly ride. Ride or die.
Well, I mean,
because I'm a good teammate.
Then blindly ride the overs. Like, three games, three overs. Every game has seen seven-plus goals.
I mean, the last game should have gone under, though, right? That was a kicking of the highest order. But, like, that thing should have... More often than not, the game probably stays under. Six goals, like, right, 6-1.
But you would also think that Edmonton would contribute more.
Yeah.
Correct?
I mean,
so
that's what I mean, though.
So what are we going to get from Stuart Skinner, too?
Away from, well, that's the other part, is if he stinks again, then I don't want to bet it under and watch that dude in between the pipes do what he's been doing.
Chris Knobloch, by the way, has said he's going to make a formal announcement closer to puck drop in the game, whether or not it's Stuart Skinner or Calvin Pickard.
They change him?
I would find it very hard to believe that they change him.
This is it, though, right?
Yes.
Like, if my man comes out and does what he does again, especially if they're down 3-1, I mean, at that point, who cares? But this has got to be it if he does get the start again tonight.
I'm not going to tell you the numbers right now because we have a Why Not Wednesday about Stuart Skinner a little bit later.
Okay.
But they nicknamed this guy Mr. Game 4 for a reason. So I would leave him in specifically for this game, for the history that he has had the back end of series and in game four. You got to give him a chance.
What a tease.
Okay, we're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, Kelly Bidlin joining us in studio. Going to continue some of that NBA Finals talk and get his thoughts on the U.S. Open. New Long Shots pod dropped yesterday. Download, subscribe, all of the things if you haven't already. What are you doing? We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This football season? Well, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You're getting a full year of VSiN Pro access for $199, and it includes a free pre-order of the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook by our guy Josh Applebaum, a no-nonsense guide to reading the market, spotting sharp action, and making more informed NFL bets. Plus, when you're a VSiN Pro subscriber, you also get access to all of our guides, the 2025-26 NFL Betting Guide dropping July 1st. You get that, our daily emails, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access, and so much more. Head over to vsin.com/subscribe today. Use our promo code BOOK to sign up. That's vsin.com/subscribe as we welcome you back to Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Third major on tour coming up this weekend from Oakmont Country Club. We are getting ready for the U.S. Open to get underway tomorrow. Golf's greatest test, a notoriously difficult course, and help us break it all down. Pumped to have Kelly Bidlin in studio with us, producer of A Numbers Game, of course, co-host of Long Shots. I was listening to the pod yesterday. Some of the stuff you guys were getting into, one, was cracking me up because of the certain name you have for an advanced metric. But two, just like all of the insight and information you were giving on how tough this course is. It looks like it's going to be chaotic and so fun.
It's going to be great. Stormy, thank you for listening. You're the one. I appreciate that.
I got you.
But yeah, no, it was... You U.S. Open, it is always one of the most fun weeks in golf. We are looking at Oakmont, which is one of the toughest courses to play that we see. This is going to be the 10th time they've hosted the U.S. Open, so we kind of know what we're getting into this week. But, man, I think it's going to be tougher than what we've ever seen it play like before.
You know, every episode, I fast forward to the end, so it counts as I listen to it just for you guys.
Oh, thanks, man.
He just fast forwards for the best bets. No. He doesn't need the information. No. He just needs to know what to play.
Just last 10 seconds.
Credit.
Just last 10 seconds. Then I hit plus 15,
just
and then we're right through.
Thumbs up and the five stars. You know, yeah.
That's all we do.
Appreciate that, man.
All right, so the common thread in talking to people about this tournament has been, I guess not outright fading, but not trying to just overtly rely on some of these big bombers off the tee. Is that generally your thought process on this?
Yeah, I think it's one of the most interesting dynamics with this course is the off the tee play. And that's before we get to the actual toughest part of the golf course, which is on the greens.
Right.
That's really where this is going to be decided, who can handle these greens. But off the tee, look, the rough is it is starting the week at 5 inches. You're talking about 28-yard wide fairways. That is very, very tiny for a PGA Tour event. So if you are not going to be accurate and you're going out into this rough, it is going to be a beast to get out of. So there is a lot of – Oakmont is a very long course. It's a par 70. Par 70, 7,372 yards is what we're dealing with. That is a long par 70. So there's a lot of discourse this week. Would you rather be long and risk it be further up there in the rough and have a shorter wedge shot into the greens, or would you rather be playing out of the fairways? I'm fine with either. I have guys on my card – that check both boxes, but I think you need to have one or the other, JVT. Either you're going for top-end distance or top-end accuracy, ended up in the fairway and playing out of the fairway.
Genuinely curious how far down the board you're willing to go, because looking through the last majors, five of the last six winners were ranked third or better in the official world golf rankings. None of the last six major winners pre-tournament were more than 20-1 odds. Can you even go far down the board, especially given the course difficulty, as you just referenced?
Yeah, it's tough. I have a couple that I did go a little bit further, but I think it is absolutely something people need to be cautious with this week. It just like the first two majors that we've had this season, I do think it is likely coming from one of those top guys, whether it is Scottie Scheffler, Bryson DeChambeau. I think John Rahm has put himself into that mix this week. I really do like John Rahm this week as well. Rory, I know it's been a tough couple weeks for him, but where he's at from a number wise betting standpoint, what he did earlier this year, I can't hate on anybody for betting that. I think Xander Schauffele's live this week. I think Ludvig Åberg could be live this week. At least I hope he is, because I bet him. but Stormy, I think once we get past some of those names, it's really hard to see somebody else going out and winning this thing when it's just been — this year has been such a divide in golf. These top-end guys have played so well, while really that next tier, next two tiers down, have struggled to put together consistent quality results. And, you know, Colin Morikawa is on that list. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of those guys you can point at and just say, okay, you've shown glimpses this season, but you haven't put them together for many long stretches.
Some would say golf is watered down, top-heavy. I think we should start to have the conversation about this. All right, let me ask you this. We generally don't – I don't think we ask about this a ton. My eye tells me I'm looking at a lot of sand. How much did that weigh into some of your factoring here when you're talking about your model and how important it was?
Yeah. It's a really easy course, JVT. Yeah. There's not a single tree that you're going to really have to contend with. Yeah, not a single water hazard on the course. They've just got 168 bunkers, the most on PGA Tour. If you're watching at home, you're seeing some of the video of Oakmont, and they're everywhere.
Right, I was going to say they're all over the place.
They're around the green. They're in the fairway. You've seen the church pews, probably.
Those things are terrifying with how high the grass is and all the sand around them. It's wild.
It is crazy. You'll also catch in some of the videos, if you watch any of the flyovers online or anything, there are some trenches. They're just trenches that are around there, and they kind of designed it last time they were at Oakmont that you could play out of these a bit more. If you're watching at home right now, you can see one of these trenches running through. This year, they apparently are not doing any work, so they're just, you know, kind of waterway trenches, and it's — if you end up there, you're probably going to have to take a drop. So it's going to be chaos playing out of that. I think you absolutely need to factor in scrambling ability, and that is coming from everywhere. And Stormy, I know you brought it up. Save your ass stats.
Love it. Love it. So good.
See ya.
That comes into play big this week.
You sent us a text for a — did you really bet this?
I think it was a secret.
No, I did. I really bet this. Yeah, this is Yeah, I can run through the card. You want that was a fun one just for you guys, okay? Because I didn't bring this up on a number.
Says it at the top of the text.
But I didn't know if that meant just for our show.
Just for your show, yeah. Just for your show, because I just made it. I think there are with the conditions, we're going to see a lot of volatility, right? This golf course is so hard to play. If you get guys that have struggled to keep it in fairways, that are spraying it off the tee, like Justin Thomas can do sometimes, like a Hideki Matsuyama can. I know it's your guy, JVT. Mm-hmm. I think there's some fun miscut parlays that you can put together this week. There's a lot of people been talking about them. But so I did one with Cameron Smith, Nick Dunlap, Tom Kim, Nick Taylor, Hideki Matsuyama, and Justin Thomas. All to miss the cut. It's 60-1. I'm sure it will hit.
Fire away. Let's go through your real bets, though, that you really do like, the full card. I know that we've got a full graphic here laying it down. One guy I'm very excited to see on your list is Shane Lowry, who I am also invested in top 20. I threw him in a top 10. I also have him in a winner without market. I find it very difficult to bet against Scottie Scheffler right now, which yes. I think a lot of people feel that way. That's not a unique thought, but when I was betting outrights this week, I specifically was targeting the winner withouts. That's probably boring. But.
I think that's smart, Stormy. Shane Lowry, I could not ignore either. He's been frustrating here recently with some of his play, but he is consistently. He's had great approach numbers the past few weeks, and he is just consistent off the tee, putting it in the fairway. And that is when you're talking about Shane Lowry and Sepp Straka. These guys are not huge distance guys, but their accuracy off the tee all season long has been incredible. So both those guys made my card. I played just the top 20 on Lowry. Just some of his play a little recently has just been a little disappointing. Don't know if I love him in the outright market. As far as the outrights, I think you have to be aware if you're not betting. I stayed away from Scheffler, DeChambeau, John Rahm. I love all three of them. I stayed away because their numbers were about exactly where I thought they should be, not where I thought they were, not where I was hoping they would be. So I have left my outright card a little open to hopefully add one of them, maybe even two live in the tournament. So the only outrights I play a little bit longer odds, guys, Ludvig. Back out to 30-1 on Ludvig. He's past couple weeks, the iron plays back. He's starting to put the full game back together. And I believe he is a guy that you're not going to see numbers like this very often go in years going forward on Ludvig Åberg. So I bet him 27-1 and then caught a 30-1, added on a little bit more. So playing Ludvig and then covering him with a top five. Next down the board there for me is Sepp Straka. I just think I like him more in the top 20 market. I think that's the better bet. But, man, the books are just continuing to be pretty disrespectful for a guy who's won twice on tour already this year, including recently. So I'm a little shocked at over 50-1 or better. I had to play it a little bit in the outright market. And then Keegan Bradley, whose ball striking numbers, and look, I got a soft spot for Keegan, but the ball striking numbers have been great. He's a top 10 ball striker in the field this week. The putter's not great, but what happens when you get on tough greens is it can help balance out the field a little bit. It's tough for everybody. It's tough for good putters, and it's tough for bad putters. So some of the great putters don't exactly have an extreme advantage there. So that's a little outright card for me. Top 10s, that's where I sunk my teeth into Bryson DeChambeau and John Rahm. I think that's where you can get good bets in right now in the placement markets if you want to attack them live later like I'm planning on it. That's what I would suggest. Xander Schauffele, I'm going to stay away from in the outrights, but I think he's a great top 20 play this week. His game's rounding into form. I don't know if he's exactly back to where he was at last year, but I think he's good enough in this field and what he's done in majors and at the U.S. Open to get that top 20 home. And then a couple of fun first-round bets. Didn't go first-round leader, going first-round top 10 on Scottie Scheffler at plus 115 and John Rahm at plus 250.
I want to give you a round of applause. That was a beautiful rundown.
Oh, thank you.
Quick 20 seconds. Pacers are cooked, right?
Pacers are cooked. If I had to bet them tonight, though, JVT, or if I had to bet the game tonight, I'd take 5.5.
You heard it here first. We got to take a quick timeout. Kelly Vidlin, everybody, make sure you check out A Numbers Game each and every weekday. And, of course, the Long Shots podcast out now, breaking down the entirety of the U.S. Open. We'll be right back.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Take your betting to the next level, ladies and gentlemen, with First Bet. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com, and use our promo code VSIN200. That'll score you a 20% rebate on all your wagers the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com.
Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
Why Not Wednesday, ladies and gentlemen? And JVT's laughing as we come in. What's going on?
I laugh every time I hear Michael Lombardi. It's good. Why not?
Yeah. He did say that a lot. We built a lot of our segments around things that we say. That's how we have Hell Yeah Brother. Still having an open pending on that one. But
yeah, we're still trying to figure some things out there, you know.
Be coming soon. Okay, let's get into it. Why Not Wednesday? Some different plus money or maybe just not as traditional props make you want to say why not. This first one isn't even a non-traditional. It's actually a star player in the NHL Stanley Cup Final that has yet to find the score sheet. Can you say why not to Alexander Barkov finally doing something tomorrow? The Panthers captain had 9 points in the 6 games entering the final, 6 goals and 11 points through the first 3 series, yet hasn't done a dang thing. He's been noticeable on the ice, so I don't want to say he hasn't done a dang thing, but in terms of score production, nothing. I know he's got a tough defensive task containing Edmonton's top line, but this has to end at some point. Why not tomorrow? Can you say why not?
No, I can't say why not because...
Why? You're a Florida Panthers guy. Shouldn't you want Barkov in the mix?
Wait. So when I say I can't say why not, doesn't that mean I agree with you?
I'm saying, can you say why not? So you said you need to say, yes, I can say why not.
Oh, okay. So I'm agreeing with you. Okay. I'm just going to say that. Okay. I agree with you. Whew. That this is going to be something that will happen. So I apologize. Maybe my head's a little out of the room right now. But I agree with you, and I think he's going to do it.
Beautiful.
Okay. Does that work?
Minus one. Okay.
I got confused on the wording. I got confused on the wording.
Minus 190 for an anytime point. Minus 105 for an anytime assist. We lost on it in game 3. I think we cash it in game 4. Okay, yes. What's the first for you?
Okay, so my first one, and I just realized that I apologize to producer Brian. I put these in my notes, and then I didn't put them in our rundown. So these are all going to be a surprise for you. but I will say this one first. Florida Panthers to win this series in 5. Can you say why not? They're winning and out the rest of the way. This is over. These guys mentally are cracked. They're shook. They hated the way, I'm talking about the Oilers, hated the way that it was officiated. They don't like playing on that ice. They're out there in that foreign environment. They are absolutely cooked. They should be down 3-0. Can you say why not to the Panthers at plus 250 winning this series in 5?
I think you're dramatic.
Mentally cooked.
No.
Especially once they go down. Think about that, too. Think about the mental hurdle that you'll have to overcome if you're Connor McDavid. You go down immediately 1-0 here, and all the talk about, hey, you know all the greats that lost the first one, but then in the second crack, they got the cup, right? And every great gets their cup every single time. Nothing is guaranteed in life. And if all of a sudden you're staring a 3-1 series deficit in the face and you're supposed to be the best hockey player in the world, and here you are staring an 0-2 record in the Stanley Cup Finals in the face with the cheering, endless maw of Florida Panther fans bearing down on you, screaming at you, banging on the glass, all of that on your shoulders while you have the relentless physical blue line coming at you wave after wave after wave.
Can we talk about how just 2 days ago you said there's no discernible difference between these two teams?
Come on, that was good. I painted a very good picture. Yeah.
That was a good rant. By the way, the greats that he's referencing, Sidney Crosby and Wayne Gretzky, both were in this same position that Connor McDavid is in now. And everybody thinks that he's the next great that's going to get his cup. It's inevitable. I think this is going to be a hard-fought series. I do think that there is something to the way that Florida won game 3. I do not think that they are going to win in 5. Is it possible? Sure. But I'm not saying why not. I'm actually going to go back to the well one more here on the Stanley Cup Final because I alluded to some numbers about Stuart Skinner earlier. Can you say why not to Stuart Skinner's game 4 greatness being a real thing in his last 6 game 4s of his postseason career? 6-0, 1.26 goals against average, 970 save percentage and 2 shutouts. He saved 161 of 166 game 4 shots, but it's not just game 6s either, JVT. In general, he gets better as the series goes on. Games 1 through 3 in the playoffs, save percentage of 875. Games 4 through 7, it's 922. Oilers are 18-3 in those games. Can you say why not to Stuart Skinner's game 4 and beyond greatness? Be legit, maybe.
Okay, so you have history. But I am going to disagree here because I don't think we're actually talking about this enough. So I was going back over this yesterday. A very simple metric, if you will. 16. Do you know what that number represents?
What does it represent?
That's how many goals he's allowed in the last four starts. He's been terrible. I don't think we're talking about this enough. My man's cooked. I don't think you can call him cooked. As somebody
yet.
Who has started one game at goalie in a roller hockey rink out there on Sahara and Maryland Parkway, and as somebody who may or may not have allowed 12 goals in said game, I understand what it's like to have to play goaltender. But seriously, like, it's just some of the weird mental. But look, maybe all of a sudden you're right. Maybe it's just something's gonna snap, and it's just game. Like you said, game four, Stuart Skinner.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. It seems like that's the case. But I don't think we're talking about, and I don't take in enough hockey media, so maybe it actually is like a really big talking point. I am surprised how poorly this man has played over the last four games is not an actual talking point here.
Oh, I think it is.
Okay.
And maybe that's because I like watch clips from TSN.
Sure.
But
okay.
Yeah, it is a big talking point, especially with the goalie. That's why Chris Knobloch not saying, yeah, it's Stuart Skinner, and it being a non-answer is a
right.
big deal.
Sub 90 save percentage over the last four games. Like, it's been bad.
Calvin Pickard, by the way, was 6-0 when he stepped in for Stuart Skinner earlier this postseason. Skinner obviously was pulled after the first two games in LA, going brutally for him. But he did play much better, and I think he's earned the opportunity to play in this one. So we'll see. We'll see. Okay, give me your next one.
All right, so I had this Why Not Wednesday. I apologize for not sending these in. This was for you considering your position, but can you say why not to now coming back in and betting Sergei Bobrovsky to win Conn Smythe? Because now that his odds have started to shrink here a little bit, and you're getting him in that plus 450 range, if you're somebody like you that has this Sam Bennett at 20-1, if Bobrovsky, let's say they come out again and they win, like, let's just call it 4-1 today or something like that. And then they, you know, let's say they close it out. He gives up, like, two goals on average the rest of the way. They're, like, there's some tightly competitive thing. Again, if we're talking about Conn Smythe being the entire length of the postseason, and he ends this series with essentially putting the lid on an offensively gifted team with the best offensive player, best player in hockey, and Connor McDavid, is this now not the time to come back in on Bobrovsky to win this thing?
I think if you look at that board and you think Florida wins, Bob is the play to make, given the situation that I'm in right now where I have the bigger ticket on Sam Bennett. I think Sam Bennett is the rightful favorite.
Right.
You don't want to bet Brad Marchand after his odds went from 60-1 to 30-1 to 4-1. I don't think that's a worthwhile play. In terms of where the odds are at and what we see the series doing, if there is a bet to be made on Florida, it's Bobrovsky, and for Edmonton, it's McDavid or Dreisaitl. There's no way else to look. I think Connor McDavid has the edge in that, but could be anybody's game.
See, very pro Stormy. Why not?
Can you say why not at Rocco's this week in Omaha that you give your girl a long shot chance in the Jello Shot Challenge? I could not believe the odds that were put out there this morning, not only from Beeson by the books, but your counter odds offer still having me is double digits on this thing. Did y'all forget I went to state school? I went to San Diego State, okay? So Jello shots are like water over there. So what are we talking about?
I went to state school too.
Yeah, and we're both raised in Vegas. I think we both should have gotten better odds just on, like, heritage alone.
Okay, so here's the thing. Here's the problem. So these are my Jello shot odds. These are much better. By the way, my odds also add up to 100%, a very modest about 1.9% hold. So you're going to want to shop at this book. Here's the thing. I have accounted many things into my odds here. For example, Mike Palm at 150-1. As I put it on Twitter today, Mike Palm is on a business trip. He's not going to get sloppy like some of these fools. So I don't think that Mike Palm is going to put himself in contention for having the most Jello shots. You are also traveling with a companion who's on a health kick. And as your partner does, so do you. And I would assume that there are some of that there that you wouldn't put it on your partner on a business trip that you're going to have to get sloppy and be taken care of. That's not Stormy. You're a professional.
I think it's actually better that I have my spouse coming with me. I can be carried out of Rocco's at the end of the night on Friday.
I just thought you were more professional than some. So here's the real thing. If we throw these
Thank
up
you.
One
I
more
do
time,
appreciate that.
Derek Stevens is the favorite at plus 250. The real sneaky favorite in long shot. And I just got a text right now that said I would make him the favorite unless by extension the field. Included in the field are the Circa employees. Wilbo, also known as Big Balls, on the trip.
Yes.
Many, many are considering him to be the real favorite. He is part of the field at 5-1, as are the Circa employees and many of our great behind-the-scenes producers and execs here at VSiN who will also be on the trip.
I'm about it. Could not be more excited.
Mitch Moss is going to be interesting because Mitch Moss is one of those extremes where I'll sit there and call him a pansy all morning on a Sunday at the Superbook because he won't be doing anything, or 30 minutes after we sit down, we're like three white Russians in and we don't know what's going to happen. So if Mitch is hit or miss, he can win this thing, or he's going to be anywhere near the top.
What I'm hoping is all you men get like fat and happy on beer, and then you just don't have the stomach for the Jello shots anymore. Meanwhile, for me, Jello shot, Jello shot, Jello shot. We're back in LSU in the Jello shot challenge, by the way. We've decided.
Very pro LSU show.
We're going to take a quick timeout when we come back. Resetting hour two on the program. Lots of Major League Baseball still to come as well. I mean, makes sense. College baseball, MLB. Let's go.